It's the Mix on 90.7 WKGC, 8 minutes after 9 o'clock, and a happy Monday morning. Queen there to kick things off with You're My Best Friend. I'm not looking at you, Tom.
Okay.
Good morning, Jason Hedden.
Good morning, Scott Kirkman.
How was the Emerald Coast Theater this weekend?
You know, it was fantastic. First weekend of the theater festival is done. There's one more weekend coming up. Thursday through Sunday. Remember, this is 35 performances of 20
That's
different
right.
shows at Emerald Coast Theater Company in South Walton County.
Yeah, so I saw pictures on Facebook.
Yeah, we were busy.
You were posting all weekend long.
I was a posting fool.
Yeah, well, that you're always a fool. Posting.
He's a fool of posting.
Jason, you've brought some friends today, or at least guests.
I have.
I don't know if they'll call you friends
or
not.
I give credit to Tom Hoots, though, you know, because I get so busy running around crazy. And it was Tom's idea. And he said, you know, do you think Jace might be interested in coming in?
I set Tom up to it.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it was your idea. So anyway.
I thought producer Brandon did this whole thing.
It could be Brandon's fault. Thanks for letting me steal your seat here, Brandon. So yeah, my buddy Jace Smith is here with his buddy Bob Chermside. And they both got some pretty strong connections to Rick Springfield, who's going to be in concert Friday night at Edgewater for the Gulf Coast State Foundation Gala. Rick Springfield's going to be in concert, and so brought Jason and Bob to share some stories and help us get
Dig
excited
the
about
dirt.
The concert on Friday.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I met Jace the first time at Tom's studio.
Right.
And he started, I mean, it was like story time with Uncle Jace. I mean, all the kids were around. And because he's a great storyteller.
Right. And most of them you don't believe until you go and see physical evidence that the stories are true. You have to go to his place to realize he's not just making stuff up.
This guy's making stuff up. He tells us he's played with Rick Springfield.
Right.
He did Jesse's Girl. I'm like, no. And the kids are like, well, who's Jesse? Right. Who's Jesse's Girl?
Who's Jesse and why does he have a girlfriend?
So, Jace, tell us a little bit about you and your story and your connection to Rick Springfield.
Well, I started working at Sound City out in Van Nuys, California, which is a very famous recording studio. There's a great documentary, Sound City. And I was working with Rick, and I'm sitting in the office, and how Bob Chermside got involved, I thought was an interesting story. They said, oh, we're looking for a road manager. And Bob was Bruce Springsteen's road manager.
I've heard of him.
And roommate, right? So I said to everybody, I go, hey, I can call Bob Chermside. And they all laughed. They all thought, they're like, oh, yeah, you can get Bruce Springsteen's road manager to be Rick Springfield's road manager. I said, yeah, give me the phone. And I called him. I said, Bob, what are you doing? He goes, well, we're off the road. I said, you want to go on the road with Rick Springfield? He goes, sure, I'll fly out tomorrow. And that's how it started. And I will say that the three of us, Rick, Bob, and I, were just inseparable and got in a lot of trouble and had a lot of fun. You know, not trouble, but we did have fun.
We never got caught.
There you go.
That makes the trouble more fun.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it was, you know, and it was during the heyday. It was during the Living in Oz tour in 83 that was just, it was a magical time. You know, I mean, we were on top of the world then. And it was just, you know, sold out, you know, Coliseums. And it was fun. I mean, it was it was like winning the lottery and living a dream all at the same time. And Rick is a great guy. He's the best boss you could ever have.
Yeah.
And I used the hell out of him, you know, because anytime he bought something, I'd go, oh, I wish I could get one of those. And I'd get it. So, you know, and he was very good to me. He bought me my first ever multi-track recorder.
Wow.
And I told Bob this story on the way here. So he had a little room above his garage, and it was just a piano, a guitar, one microphone, and a Fostex 4-track. And he'd record all his demos there. And I remember he gave me a box full of cassettes. He goes, oh, here's some cassettes that you can use to record in your machine. They were all his demos.
Really?
And I recorded over them.
Oh,
that was
that's
a good
a sad
move.
Story.
I just saw Tom cringe.
Yeah.
I recorded. And I remember I listened to a few of them, and like I hear Ron barking in the background, you know, and like Barbara's wife yelling for him, you know, Rick. And I'm like, oh, I'm recording over this.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
it's worth
all those
now.
Songs went on the album for the movie Hard to Hold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, so
unbelievable.
I can't believe I
now,
did that.
Do you remember the first time I went into his garage in Toluca Lake, I think is
right.
where I was living.
Yeah.
Rick is a big, big sci-fi fan. And as people might not know, he's the number one collector of Star Wars action figures
really?
In the world. And if you Google it, you can see him for 15 minutes just rattle on about all his characters, you know, never unwrapped, never played with. And so I walk into his garage, and I'm having deja vu. I see these, like, it's a pole, like 6 feet high, and these little plexiglass things coming off it. And I'm like, I know what that is, but I can't place it. He goes, did you ever see the movie Forbidden Planet? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, that's the fence that they kept the invisible monster out with. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Wow.
He's quite a
guy. I didn't know that about him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and horror movies. We were, one night we were watching a horror movie at his house. I think it was not Dawn of the Dead, but one of those, not Night of the Living Dead. What was the one? All I remember is a helicopter blade chops the top of somebody's head off in the movie. It was a great horror movie. And we were watching it, and all of a sudden he screamed, but it wasn't a scary scene. Two fans had found the house, and their faces were pressed up against the French doors. And when he saw it, it really scared the heck out of us.
I imagine it would.
And that was pretty funny. And then, this is just, he had a house, like I guess it would be a house boy, and his name was Mr. T, not Mr. T, the famous wrestler. And Rick, you know, at the time was very, very successful. And they told him, you know, you got to start investing and, you know, things like that. So he bought, I think they were like, I can't remember the artist, but we'll say, you know, some 17th century artist sketches. You know, that, you know, you should buy these. They're worth millions, and that's a good investment. And Mr. T threw them out.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think they weren't sure, but I remember being in the office and hearing about Mr. T throwing away Rick's hard work.
So where in his career did you guys jump in? I mean, was this General Hospital?
Well, I used to pick him up at General Hospital.
Really?
And I will say I was on General Hospital at least five times.
Really?
The first time I walked on to the set, it was the first time I'd ever been in a film studio. And they were filming a scene, and the director, I could hear him, he was going, someone is in the eye of the actor. I had no idea what he was talking about. And Rick was like, that's you. You're standing too close. So I backed up. So then the director, when I would show up, he'd say, oh, Jace, get in that bed. And I'd lay in the bed, and I'm like, wow, I'm going to be in General Hospital. And then the whole production would move to the other side of the room. And I would just be laying in this dark bed. And every now and then he'd yell, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
So, and then it just exploded. Rick's career, you know, when Jesse's Girl started playing, you know, because the first single they pushed was the Sammy Hagar song, I've Done Everything for You.
Right.
And how that song got on the record was Keith Olsen, the producer, was producing Sammy Hagar and just slipping Rick in every now and then when he had free time. And that was a song that Sammy wasn't going to put on his record. And Keith Olsen, you know, great producer, he said, hey, I think it's a single. You know, let's put it on your record. But it was interesting. They pushed that first. And it was a DJ in Philadelphia that flipped the record over and started playing Jesse's Girl.
Jesse's Girl was a B-side.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's always the DJ, you know?
Yep. That's right. That's right.
Always the DJ.
And it was interesting because, you know, RCA wasn't really thrilled about signing Rick. You know, they weren't like, oh, we have this brand new great artist. It was more like, yeah, okay. Because Jonas Gottfried, Rick's manager, he made the record. You know, the record company didn't make that record. You know, Rick went with a finished product.
Wow.
And then, I don't know if this is true, but I think it is. They didn't want his face on the cover because he was on a soap opera. You know, they said, we don't want to go that route. You know, to have a soap opera star on an album cover. So that's why he put his dog on the cover.
Really?
Ron. Yeah. And I'm going to brag. I'm probably one of the only people that could, you know, pet Ron and get along with him because he was terrifying. Yeah. Ron was terrifying. I mean, he'd look at you and he'd scare you. But, you know, and I could pet him for some reason. And, all right, here's a funny story I think is funny. Another friend of mine was visiting at Christmas. And Barbara called me up and she said, can you come to the house? There's going to be some deliveries. And, you know, will you wait for them? We got to run out. I said, sure. So I get there and they go, now Ron is in the house. So I said, well, I'm bringing a friend. They go, well, we'll put him on the other side of the house. almost shut the door, and Ron got out. And we were literally, it was the Three Stooges. We were running in circles around the house until we could get the other door shut.
What kind of dog was Ron?
Pit bull.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And Rick had rescued him, found him in the street. Rick, the dog lover. Huge dog lover.
Animals.
Yeah, animals.
All animals, yeah.
Well, it's 19 minutes after 9 o'clock. Let's take a quick music break.
Okay. I think... Jace will probably remember this song. Legend has it that he wrote this song. He was due to come in my studio and work with some students, and I think he wrote this song on the way to the studio, I think on the outside of a McDonald's bag, but I'm not real sure.
It was a cup.
I couldn't see what you had in your hand out there.
You're really going to play that?
Oh, I'm really going to play that. And this is what happens when you allow yourself to be recorded. Never trust a recording technician. You should know that by now.
Oh, my goodness.
Didn't we put it on that CD?
Yes,
for...
yes. The Music Matters CD. He donated this song to Music Matters. But here we go with Jay Smith. Oh. Let Our Hearts Decide.
Helpless, confused, and crucified. But I can't stop the way I feel inside. 'Cause in my darkness, you are the only light. But we both run, girl, we both hide. Both so afraid to share what's deep. Let's break down the wall and put the past behind. Open up that door, step aside and let our hearts decide. Let me in your castle, put away your pride. Take up all that. Chance, I know you'll be surprised. Let's break down the wall and put the past behind. Open up that door, step aside and let our hearts decide. I know your secrets. Together we have cried. We climbed up mountains, we sailed across the sea. We both were searching, but never did believe. Let's step aside, let our hearts decide. Just step aside and let our hearts decide.
90.7 WKGC, this is The Mix. That's Jay Smith. What was the song title on that one, Tom?
Let Our Hearts Decide.
I think it has a good hook.
You know, it just showed how what a sensitive guy he is, you know, because he really is just, you know, real sensitive. And Tom,
it was you looking in my eyes.
Oh, is that what it was?
You
okay.
Know, brought that out in me.
It could have been the McDonald's employee that gave you the cup.
It might have been the McDonald's employee that he fell in love with, but he obviously was in love when he wrote that one.
Yeah, no, I buried her in Palm Springs. Okay. cups out there somewhere. No, I'm teasing.
This is being recorded.
Now Bob and I...
No, actually, we saved the cup, and it's in a little shadow box at the studio. So
just in case.
Just in case, you know. Better save that over there. We might want that.
Bob, let's bring you into the conversation. Not really so much about Rick Springfield, because I'm interested in your relationship also with the boss, Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
Bruce Springsteen, to be confused with Bruce Springfield. Which,
right.
It's got to get confused.
Yeah, you still don't have that right. Yeah. It's Rick.
Him too. So how'd you get involved with Bruce Springsteen?
I used to do concert security for John Scherer, who was a big promoter in the tri-state area. And Bruce played at a lot of college events and things like that. And I used to work those concerts, and I got to be friendly with the crew guys. And Bruce really didn't have a security person back in those days. So the crew said, you know, we're going down. We're going to play Georgetown University. Why don't you come on down with us and just, you know, help put the security together? Because in those days, you had, like, Wagon Hut security, you had the college security, and you had the police. And there was no one really coordinating the whole mess. So I went down and I did a few shows, and this road manager, Rick Siguso, came up to me one night, and he knew what I was doing, and he goes, Bruce wants to see you backstage. So I said, okay. And I hadn't met Bruce since Upstage days, back in the late 60s, I guess. And I went to see Bruce, and Bruce goes, so I hear you're working for me these days. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, are we paying you well? Which was kind of funny, because no one in the band or the crew was making any money, because everything was held in escrow, because it was during that Michael Pell, John Landau lawsuit. So I did security for the band for about 2 months. At the end of the tour, I went home. I was living with my parents, and I get a call one day, and it's Bruce. And he goes, Bob, I had to let Rick Siguso go. He goes, do you think you could be my road manager? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I could do that. He goes, well, part of the job is you got to move in with me. He goes, can you cook? And I said, actually, I'm a pretty good cook. And he goes, well, I heard that. He goes, how soon can you move in? I said, I guess I could be there tomorrow. So he asked me if my parents had any old furniture that they weren't using. Because Bruce had rented a 12-bedroom house in Homedale, New Jersey. And the only thing he had in this 12-bedroom house was a Buckaroo pinball machine, a desk, a 19-inch TV, and a pool table.
Priorities.
Yeah, yeah. So I moved in, and I became his road manager, roommate, you know. And, I guess I...
We had fun there. We used to go back to the house.
Oh, it was a ball.
Fun. It was a ball.
And I did, like, 5 years with Bruce. If I hadn't lived with him, I might still be working for him. But that's a rough relationship.
I imagine. I mean?
So I left him in 80, went on to work for Garland Jeffries, Kiss, the original Blues Brothers band.
Really?
And, like Jay said, back in 83, he got me the job with Rick. And it was one of the most interesting jobs I've ever had, because I never had to work with a band that had a fan base like that. Because Bruce really didn't appeal to the women. Kiss didn't, you know what I mean? And Rick was just, you know, you had the General Hospital crowd, and you had the crowd that liked his music. And it was absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I mean, our tour bus would pull up to a venue, and it would be surrounded by women. You couldn't get off the tour bus. It was just, it was nuts.
Now, I think this is kind of cute. I, from like 10,000 feet away, with a baseball cap on and sunglasses, because my hair was cut similar, resembled Rick. And I would get off the bus in the morning, and every time I got off the bus, 25 women running at me full speed, and then stop and go, oh, that's not him. And that was like my great morning. And I remember
Rick... It's the story of my life.
Rick was so funny. He says, you know, Jace, someday I'll be walking the beach in Malibu, and they're going to run up to me, and they're going to say, that's not Jace. I always thought that was pretty sweet.
That was funny. Cute.
But Bob Chermside and Bruce Springsteen would come to the Stone Pony. And in those days, I had a band called Max, and which later I played with Richie Sambora from Bon Jovi.
You were his roommate also, weren't you?
No.
I thought you said you were his roommate.
Well, I used to stay at his house a lot.
That works.
And his mother would yell at us and call us bums and tell us to get out of bed and go get a job.
Right.
And Bob would be, you know, always with Bruce in the back of the Stone Pony. And then Bob would always send up a tray of shots for us to drink.
Shots of tequila.
Yeah, right. Shots of tequila. And we were a pretty popular band, so there's a lot of people watching, and they're like, ooh, that's, you know, Bruce and Bob are here. And Bob would send up the shots, and we'd, you know, talk to Bob and Bruce and do the shots. And then always like the third or the fourth time, he'd send up shots of vinegar.
That's mean.
Which was, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. And then we had our security guy. We'd come out of the dressing room, and I think back then I weighed 130 pounds, and I was the fattest guy in the band. And we'd come out of the dressing room, and the Stone Pony was always packed. And our guy, you know, had the flashlight walking us to the stage, and Bob would just be lurking, waiting. And he would hit Eric in the chest and knock him into us, and we'd all fall down like dominoes. And it just ruined our whole rock image, Bob.
I know.
It was terrible.
Oh, God.
That's funny. We will share some more stories that we'll find some probably better ones off air, but we'll share some more stories. We've got to look at that weather forecast. News 13's Tyler Eliason has that here in just a moment right here on The Mix on 90.7 WKGC.
On the next The Soul of Jazz, we will highlight some of the newest music available, like Thundercat and his brother Ronald Bruner Jr. The Soul of Jazz airs Saturdays at 7 p.m. on GC 90.7.
The Mix on 90.7 WKGC. Bruce Springsteen, Glory Days. Programming today sponsored in part by Sweet Bay. Sweet Bay is a bayfront village in Panama City designed to inspire natural and relaxed living with a dash of southern charm. The Sweet Bay community features parks, walking trails to the water, a future town center, and a lot more. It's got all the makings of a friendly neighborhood with everything you need just a short walk away. If you'd like some more information about the Sweet Bay community, call 844-35-SWEET or go online to sweetbayfl.com. We are living the glory days here. Or
yes,
reliving
we
them.
Are. Yeah. Yep.
Jay Smith, and you've been talking about Bruce Springfield. Bruce Springfield.
Rick.
I knew that. We just played. Jason, don't look at me like that. Rick Springfield.
He's a DJ, okay? Yeah. We have to give him some slack,
all
right?
Lucky I can read.
You're on the radio. You can write it down and put it in front of you.
No, it's literally right there.
You
in front
don't
of
even
me.
Have to memorize the lines, Scott.
I know that.
This is why we kicked him out of visual and performing arts.
Exactly. He's not very visual, I'll tell you that.
No, I've got the face for radio. Bob, though, we were talking about Bruce Springsteen because you were his road manager for a while,
right.
And you were just about to tell us off air that you played on a song.
Yeah, it was 1977, and we were in the studio. The band had all gone. This was, I think it was about midnight, and it was myself, John Landau, Jimmy Iovine was doing the engineering, and we were listening to what the band had done that day, and all of a sudden, Bruce got an idea, and he goes, wait a minute, hold it. He goes, John Landau, his manager, was also a drummer. He said, John, get on the drums. He said, Bobby, get on the bass. Don't play any of that John Entwistle crap you play. Just follow me. Because I was a big Who fan. And you know. So we went in and we did this track. And nothing ever came of it. And I think about 20, 30 years later, he released The Promise, which was, you know, a compilation of songs that didn't make it on,
right.
You know, Darkness or The River or whatever. And I'm actually down in Florida on vacation, and I got a call from a friend, Billy Smith, and he goes, hey, Bobby, congratulations. And I'm like, on what? He goes, Bruce actually credited you for playing bass on a song called It's a Shame. And I'm like, what? So I got home, and you know, to just 100 emails congratulating me on playing bass. So I called Landau Management, and I said, that's really nice. And they said, well, you know, we're going to send you a gold album for it. And I'm like, oh, that's good. You know, is there any money involved? And they're like, no. But, you know, you can say you played on the album. So that was my big claim to fame, you know.
Bob's being modest. He's a great bass player. Yeah. He plays everything, guitar, keyboards,
really?
Everything.
I actually, I guess this was 84 or something like that. We were up in Providence, Rhode Island.
Christmas.
At Christmas time.
Yeah.
And my parents were in the audience. And one thing that sort of made my relationship with Rick special, besides the fact that we're the same, just about the same age, we both had a love for The Who. I mean, hands down my favorite group in the whole world. So Rick comes up to me before the show and he goes, you want to play with me on stage tonight? And I'm like, Oh my God, yeah, sure. He goes, well, we're going to do Substitute by The Who. He goes, I know you know it, and I knew it, no per note. He goes, but there's a catch. He goes, you have to wear a Santa Claus suit. And I'm like, what? He goes, you have to dress as Santa Claus. So I dressed as Santa Claus, and we came out, and we did Substitute. And at the end of the song,
yeah,
he smashed his Strat on stage, which just, you know,
got a little carried away.
Yeah, yeah, but it just, you know, he became my hero at that point in time. So,
do you remember when we were in Hong Kong, what Rick made us do? Do you remember that?
Oh, geez, you mean dress up as the Emperor and Empress?
We were there was a like the gown of the Emperor and the Empress, like museum pieces. And of course, you know, Rick was the star, so whatever he wanted, they would do it for him.
We run that floating restaurant.
Yeah, they're right, in the middle of the Hong Kong Harbor.
Right.
And here's these gowns, you know, and it's a big display. And Rick says, I would really like Jason Bobby to dress up in that. And they had to make all these phone calls, and they called the press. And we have video of that. And it is hilarious.
Embarrassing.
They dressed us up as the Emperor and Empress, and
so
Rick
who was the Emperor
it.
And who was the Empress?
I was the Empress.
I
love because you can hear Rick. He's filming, and he's going, "This is it, folks. Jace is wearing a dress. It's come to this." And he called us drag queen origines.
Oh boy!
Well, we should mention the reason you guys are here. We are talking about Rick Springfield, who's going to be at the Gulf Coast State College Foundation Gala, which is coming up on Friday, the 19th. And if you'd like tickets or if you'd like to sponsor a table, you can contact Margie at 850-872-3812. And that's happening at the Edgewater Beach and Golf Resort. Are you guys going to be there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, when I started working for Rick, you know, he was known as a pop artist. And all my friends are serious musicians. And I'd come and I'd say, you have to come to this show. We've got like Tim Pierce on guitar, Brett Tuggle, these incredible studio musicians were his backing band. And people were like, Rick Springfield, come on. You know, it's like
he's on General Hospital. Yeah.
He puts on a show that will just rock your socks off. I mean, he surrounds himself with the best musicians. Yeah. His songs are absolutely incredible. And my friends that did come to the show, they were like, oh my God, you know what I mean?
He's a rock and roller, and it's just, you know, but he had that reputation from the General Hospital.
Yeah.
And it's, and he really, and I mean, he's very well versed in all music, which a lot of people don't know. I mean, like, you know, when you'd hear him at a sound check, you're like, wow, this guy really plays the guitar. And I mean, why is Jason holding my hand?
We asked him not to do that while you were talking, but apparently he didn't pay any attention.
I mean, it's just, Jace. Does his head have to be on my shoulder?
Jace, you told me you were going to be nervous, and you asked me off air to keep you calm.
So we were talking about this off air. How'd you guys meet? Because Jason, I met Jace through Tom, kind of, at the studio, but... You had been around visual performing arts because of Jason, so...
He was on the beach. He was running,
Was he running in slow motion?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
he had a Speedo on, and my God, I just said, that man looks like a Greek god.
My wife is listening, by the light. And she knows that I would never
He showed
be,
up a no. few weeks ago in fishnet, so it's...
We were advertising cabaret. And, what else are you going to do? No, it was Dr. Steve Donovan. Actually, Steve saw you performing on the beach.
Right.
And he said, you need to meet this guy. And we did. And you've been, I said off the air, you've been extremely gracious to students here at Gulf Coast State College for the last few years. I brought Jace in for 3 or 4 years in a row in the Acting 2 class. And we did an acting for the camera unit. And then we'd go and edit short films and play them back for the final.
Fun. So that brings me to this question. You're this musician who's played with these guys and partied with these guys. Mm-hmm. What are you doing teaching, showing kids behind the camera? Acting for the camera.
When my music career went down like the Hindenburg... It went down about that fast. I'm probably the only guy that didn't go like, oh, my God, I love film. Mm-hmm. And I met David Fincher, who's now, you know, huge director. Well, he had done a Rick video. So I knew David. And I needed a job. I said, you know, I got to do something. And we met Nigel Dick and I met David at Propaganda Films. And I started working there as a PA. just like, you know, go get coffee, sure. sweep up the floor. And I love film, and I had a Bolex camera, and I started shooting. And it was just luck and timing. So Nigel asked me to shoot a Guns N' Roses video.
Really?
So it was Sweet Child of Mine. And if you watch it, when Axl's in the dressing room, I shot myself in the mirror. I kind of switched over and shot him in the mirror.
I'm going to have to look that up.
I've seen you a couple of times in that video. You saw like the black and white part of it.
Yeah.
It was good.
So all of a sudden, I had a film career as a cinematographer.
And you're wearing Guns N' Roses today.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And, hey, $9 at Kmart,
yeah.
these t-shirts, $9. They're great. And and here's an interesting story if you're a cinematographer. So I shot the Guns N' Roses, and I truly messed up the film, okay? Nigel said to me, he goes, Jace, I want it to look like the Beatles in the Cavern Club, very grainy. So I said, all right, I called Kodak. I said, guys, how do I do that? What's the best way to do that? And they told me, I still remember, shoot 5.56 film, underexpose it by one stop, and overdevelop it, push it two stops. I said, okay. So at the end of like 14 hours, my AC, my camera assistant, Marcia, says to me, she goes, what do I write on the film report? I guess God works in mysterious ways. I said, push it three stops. Which was one stop too many.
Mm-hmm.
So when the next morning we went to the Telecine and the footage came up, I panicked. I'm like, oh my God, I have to leave LA. You know, I just wasted 300 grand. And everybody in the room goes, this is brilliant. This is unbelievable. So I just milked that for a year. You know, I didn't tell anybody I made a mistake. And it was very funny that David Fincher calls me over and he goes, hey, Jace, I'm doing Paula Abdul's next video. Can you shoot it and give me that Guns N' Roses look? And of course, I went, yeah, I think I can do that. I didn't tell him, yeah, I can screw up the film for you, too.
So, what video was that for Paula Abdul?
It was Forever Your Girl. So watch Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine, and Forever Your Girl. I just shot the same video twice. But Marcia Tinney, God bless her, she wrote everything down. She kept great notes. And I called her and I said, Marcia, what did I do? You know, and she goes, you pushed it three stops. I'm like, oh, thank God. So, yeah, and I loved it. And then I got to direct, you know, I started directing videos. And that was, and it was just, you know, I love film. I love it.
How do you end up here in Panama City?
My parole officer and psychiatrist said that it would be a really nice place for me.
What happened to most of us.
I was directing a show in Austin, Texas on polo, horse polo. It was a blast. For a year I did this. And a friend of mine lives here who's from New Jersey, Asbury Park. And he said, you got to come to Panama City. You're going to love it. And I thought he meant Panama City. And I said, my passport's back in L.A. He's like, you idiot, Florida. And I love it. I mean, I bought a little house in the Cove, and I'm not leaving. I love it. I mean, he's visiting, so that's kind of a pain. But once I get rid of him.
This place actually reminds me a bit of New Jersey.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I love it down here. I've been down here three times.
Panama City, if you shrunk Panama City to like a quarter of a mile, you have Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Yeah.
You do. To the left of you is a crackhead. To the right of you is a billionaire. You know, and in the summertime, it explodes with people. And in the wintertime, it's a quiet little town. And that's what Asbury Park was like. It was, you know, just this wild carnival in the summer and then a ghost town in the winter.
No snow here, though.
No snow.
Just snowbirds.
And I don't miss that at all. Well, I was in L.A. for 32 years, so I really don't like the snow.
Where did you meet Richie Sambora?
Okay, Richie, I met.
Tell us who he is, by the way, for the folks who don't
Richie,
know.
Richie is the lead guitarist in Bon Jovi. And I had bought Bruce Foster. I mean, you know a lot of Bruce's. I bought Bruce Foster's brand new album that came out. And I was listening to it. And then it was like 3 days later, I'm walking to the mall in Eatontown. And Bruce Foster passes me. And he stops and he goes, hey, do you play keyboards? And I went, yeah. And I didn't play very well. He used to have to take a magic marker and mark the notes.
He didn't ask if you could play well.
So I join his band. He gives me, you know, he says, can you learn the songs? I said, I have the album. I just bought it like a week ago. So we go to Trenton, New Jersey, and we're going to record. He goes, oh, you're going to meet our lead guitarist, Richie Sambora. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, I'm going to show this guy how to play. And I remember Richie walked in, and he put his guitar on, and it was like almost under his neck. Because really, that's where a guitar should be, that high. And I'm thinking, oh, this guy can't play. Look at how he's wearing his guitar. And as soon as he started playing, I went, yeah, I'm going to play rhythm. I'm not playing lead. And And we're still close. Richie and I are still good friends. And we used to I used to go over his house, and you know, we'd stay out till 4 or 5 in the morning playing music. And then we'd go back to his house and we'd get in his bed and go to sleep. Not anything funny, but you know, we're sleeping. And his mom used to come and yell at us, "Get up! Get up! Why don't you go get a job?" And in fact, Bob Chermside, his dad and my dad used to circle the want ads.
Really?
And they'd be sitting on the table. And our parents said that maybe we should take that job on the New Jersey Parkway collecting tolls because it has good hospitalization and you get to wear a uniform.
And inhale diesel exhaust all day long, too. Yes.
Yeah.
So, I love the Green Stamp Parkway anyway.
Yeah. Did you get the opportunity to work with or meet the rest of Bon Jovi?
Oh, yeah.
Or Bon Jovi himself?
I did one of their videos, which I shouldn't say this, but it was a song probably nobody's ever heard called Dry County. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
that's the one I got to do. Yeah, and that was very sweet of Richie to get me that. But Richie's great. He's a great guy, and he really hasn't changed. I mean, Bruce and I would go up to the house all the time. You know, he's married to Heather Locklear, mm-hmm. and that was always fun to have her cook us dinner. You know,
we were at your
apartment.
We were living with Susie.
Yeah,
and Jessica said, "I want you to meet a friend of mine, Richie Sambora." So Richie came over and he sat down and he took his guitar out, and I remember he had this white Stratocaster and it had stars as inlays on the neck, and I'm like, geez, God. And he was telling us how he was going to be starting this group with Bon Jovi, and I'm like, yeah, good luck with that, pal.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Oh boy.
Well, it's funny. A lot of people don't know John Bon Jovi. When we were all playing the club scenes in New Jersey, he loved a group called Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. That was his favorite band.
Mm-hmm.
So John used to dress like a gangster, you know, with
really?
The hat and the tie and the jacket. And he was singing, you know, like R&B songs. So when Richie
with the long hair?
Yeah. So when Richie told me he was going to join, you know, Bon Jovi, I'm like, really? I'm like, do you think that's going to work? And well, it worked.
Did.
And now Tico, who's, I mean, they're all friends of ours. We, you know, the drummer, Tico to us was the old guy. Because I remember he was the only one that didn't have to have a fake ID to buy alcohol. So, and I remember we played the Drift Inn, it's where I met Bob Chermside. I was working at Mrs. J's, and I said, yeah, my band's playing at the Drift Inn, which was just, oh my God, the dumpiest, worst bar in the world. And I asked this guy, Lance, who is a local hero, great artist. I said, Lance, you know, can you come see me play? I'm playing this weekend. We got a weekend gig. And he brought Bob. You know, we were like, holy cow, that's Springsteen's, you know, roommate mm-hmm. and road manager. And then that's where the whole him and I just clicked and hit it off. And so that what happened, eventually we got to play the Stone Pony, which is where everybody wanted to play. But the interesting story about the Drift Inn, this horrible bar that just smelt like urine and vomit. I mean, it was disgusting. And we would play there, and literally around the corner was the Stone Pony, the holy grail of clubs to play. And we'd go eat at the Inkwell at night. It was a late night little restaurant in an old house. And Bob would be there with Bruce over in the corner, and there would be another rock star in the other corner, and we'd be, you know, sitting there eating. And I remember we were complaining about it. I'd be like, yeah, we're playing the Drift Inn. God, you know, what a dump. And our drummer was a very sweet guy named Bob Kernacki. He goes, well, you know, Bruce Springsteen used to play the Student Prince. And we're like, yeah, okay, big deal. He goes, that's what the Drift Inn used to be called. And we're like, oh, Bruce played this dump too. Okay. So anyway, it was just kind of neat. You know, we said, so, and it happened. I mean, 6 months later, we were one of the house bands at the Stone Pony. So it was a lot of fun, a lot of great memories.
We're winding down the hour real quickly. Mm-hmm. Musical influences.
Oh, man. I love country music. I play dobro, mandolin,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, very odd. I'd be in my spandex pants and my big hair playing the mandolin, and the rock and roll guys would be going, what's that thing?
You got a miniature guitar.
Yeah, what is that? Looks like a bow tie. I love everything. I mean, I love pop music, the mm-hmm. Raspberries, Badfinger. Badfinger was one of my all-time favorite groups. You know, the Beatles, everything. I mean, I couldn't, my taste goes all the way back to the 20s. You know, I just,
sure.
I like everything but Bob's music. It's just,
and
you know,
Bob, real quickly, what are your influences?
I think the Beatles, as, you know, everyone, everyone at the Shore started playing guitar when they were 13 years old,
right?
Because of the Beatles.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That was the big one, you know? It's
all right, I got to cut him off and brag about him. There's one thing about Bob I hate. He plays piano, he plays guitar, he plays bass. He will play the most beautiful stuff, and I'll say, Bob, record that. And he goes, oh, yeah, okay, I will.
Yeah.
And he never does. Never. And it really, I want the world to hear this. It irritates me beyond belief.
Well, you know, we've got a recording studio right here at Gulf Coast State College.
We do.
Jeez, okay. Yeah, we've got Boundless Sounds, which is a student record label.
Absolutely.
They made four CDs this semester. So, Bob, we can hook you up in our studio over in Visual and Performing Arts, not to mention Studio 812 in Lynn Haven.
That's right. But Tom's not going to be working on that, I hope, because
No, I'll get Scott to do it. I'll just stay out. Scott can use the studio. I'll just stay away. I'll go to...
Tom, you're an amazing engineer. I just don't think you should be hitting people.
Well, it's one of the reasons I get that kind of result that I get, that sense of stressed fear in the voice when you sing. It's because I'm about to whap you with a rolled-up newspaper.
Rick Springfield is headlining this weekend the Gulf Coast State College Foundation Gala. It's happening May 19th. It's this Friday at Edgewater Beach and Golf Resort. If you'd like information about it, call Margie at 850-872-3812. Thank you all for coming
Thank
in.
You Thank you guys so very much. Always a pleasure.
You guys are
Thank
welcome
you.
To come back, and we'll close out with this Love hour to. With a song I'm sure you're familiar with. Here's a little Rick Springfield on the mix on 90.7 WKGC.
Jesse is a friend. Been a good friend of mine, but lately something's changed. It ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl, and I wanna make her mine. And she's watching him with those eyes, and she's loving with that body. I just know it. Yeah, he's home.